is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show or podcast, number 191 in the series for Franklin Matters, now collaborating with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This recording shares the Municipal Affordable Housing Trust meeting held on Monday, January 13, 2020, in room 205, beginning at 9 a.m. in the Municipal Building. The agenda is listed. Effectively, John Jewell of Jewell & Associates gave an update on the Franklin Ridge Senior Housing Project. Brian Taberna, Director of Planning and Community Development, discussed the housing production plan. The link to the proposal document for Franklin Ridge Senior Housing is provided in the show notes. After the presentation and discussion on that project, the folks in the room did a round of introductions, as this was the first time the group met in a while. I had stepped out of the room to arrange for a copy of the presentation, so did not participate in the round. The current housing production plan referred to can be found on the Town of Franklin page, and I provided a link in the show notes. Additional information on the Municipal Affordable Housing Trust can be found on the Town of Franklin page, and the link is provided. The meeting runs approximately 75 minutes, so without further ado, here's the Municipal Affordable Housing Trust meeting of January 13.
Permit.
Well, I actually got to go down and find out where it is. But yeah, thank you very much.
All right.
And we're getting a crowd here.
Crowd now, or?
Very unusual.
Oh, there we are.
Okay. We'll put somebody in there, I think.
Yeah. Brian.
Brian.
Oh, it looks great. Yeah. Thank you very much.
We're formally started.
Yep.
One minute.
How's everything going? Beautiful weekend, wasn't it?
Can't beat these weekends in January like this.
It's a nice break.
Yeah.
Look at the forecast. I watch it nonstop all winter for snow, right? And we're going to be like 8 degrees in the next weekend or something. Yeah.
8 next weekend?
Yeah. 10 degrees for like several days.
The worst depressing.
I know. It's January. And imagine 10 degrees.
The worst thing I heard was one of the guys on the station saying, well, you know, when last time they had a warm stretch like this, they got pounded in February.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. With snow and stuff. I was like, right. Really? You haven't tell us that?
Yeah. You can blame it all on him.
Yeah.
Call him back up.
Yeah.
Right.
Change the weather pattern.
9 o'clock.
Let's go.
Call the meeting to order.
Municipal Affordable Housing Trust, and let it begin.
All right.
So
you're taping this, Steve?
Yes. I did notes to them beforehand.
Okay.
Yep.
Just want to make sure everybody's aware.
Yep. Okay. Sure.
So can I just thank first of all the trust and the town and town administrator for the support that we got at the comprehensive permit process with the ZBA, which was approved back on December the 12th. And we have had a 20-day appeal period, which I will check to make sure that is all set, and then it gets recorded. So that was a big document that we needed to really become legitimate in the eyes of the state. And DHCD actually was calling me in December and checking in and so forth. So. I will take that app, you know, the permit, and forward it to them and tell them, hey, we want to get in here for the financing side. So what we thought we'd do, Lucho, we'll just quickly go through the slides, because basically this is what we ended up providing to the ZBA, and it kind of gives you a real sense of, because a lot of the civil engineering was done.
Yeah,
so I'm going to pass along.
Yeah, the only thing we added, I mean, this is the site again, in red, to the bottom is the condos, and to the right is high school, and then there's a vocational school to the left, and top is around the corner, you know, the neighborhood, the residential neighborhood. just a closer view of the site. Again, the high school, the vocational school. This is the existing site plan that's in place. There's an access road which stops right past Eaton Place. All the utilities are kept over there. And then basically the slopes up to a plateau where the wetland is right there. Around the quay, the access road is right up top of the page to the north. This is what was added. We did an intensive study, civil engineer, the access road, the extended access road, the proposed project. Again, the wetland to the left. There's also an access road that connects it to the Rondo Quarry. There's a gate that's just for emergency vehicles. There's, again, this proposed floor plan, or the site of the building. And to the left is a parking lot. There's 65 parking spaces. There's some additional parking spaces for the service people, mechanical, plumbing, and electrical. There's big access to the front. There's that circle access. That's the front of the building. And then you see the Eaton Place. There's some retention basins on the other side of the structure. Again, this was all done by Greer and Allen, and it also was reviewed by the engineers for the town.
Yeah, CONCOM did do a determination of applicability for this particular, as you can see, the wetlands is, you know, we designed this such that the wetlands is not impacted. There were just some minor, on the buffer, some minor elements that we're going to have to take into consideration, basically in terms of the walls and the retaining walls and stuff like that, so that, because we do encroach into the buffer just a little bit. But it was a minor disturbance to the CONCOM. Other than that, we got sign off.
Yeah, the only thing was that if you see that the landscape was that where they, you know, they we had to do some modify the landscaping or the existing contours to make it work for the park, and that's the only disturbance we had with the wetlands. That's the grading plan, just to show that, you know, just to give the right percentage of slope of the road, and also the site of buildings, and all, you know, the retention basins. Proposed new retention basin on the inside. There's also an additional one next to the Eaton Place as well. Landscape, just provide all landscaping, lighting along the road, trees, intended new trees to buffer the parking, as well as the structure, and again, along the new proposed road to the project. We did this for the neighbors, just wanted to see what the slope, you see the building with the slope, and that's the residential, the closest structure to the site, just to show what the sight line was compared to what the existing, to the existing structures. Also, the type of light fixtures in the parking lots to minimize the spillage of lighting to the neighbors. Floor plan, again, there's 64 parking spaces, 65 actually, and there are 13 one-bedroom on the first floor. There's 700 square feet, and 3 2 bedrooms, 900 square feet. Again, that's the circulation is in green, the main entrance, 2 elevators. There's a meeting room with toilets, public toilets. There's also a business office. There's a library, there's a computer room, and mechanical areas on the left of the building. The rest is non-residential units. This is the second floor, which is similar to the third as well. Again, this is the circulation in green and all residential units. There's 61 bedrooms. And 6 2 bedrooms on the second floor. Third floor plan similar to the second. The typical one bedroom unit layout, again 700 square feet, there's an open living area to the kitchen, there's a full bath, and one bedroom, and closet, and a washer and dryer.
I have a question. Sure. I thought you were going to go with no tubs, you were just going to go with this. Walk-in showers.
That's just a simple. We haven't got to that point.
It's a good point, though. Yeah. We are going with the showers.
Yeah. Just as a representation.
Okay.
But so they all have to, you know, put the detail. But group one, which is, you know, there's certain limitations. Mm-hmm. There's 2 bedroom units, 2 bedrooms. Again, full bath as well. Wash and dry closet and living area open to the kitchen as well. the roof plan. That was make it tight to make it work. The front elevation again will be clapboards. It'll be all residential materials, clapboards, double hung windows, and also have gable roof slopes. Again, just to pick up the residential neighborhood adjacent to the property.
Sorry.
Morning.
As well, shingle roofs, and there's also some trim just to cut down the messing of the structure as well. And the right elevation, renovation, that's the after meeting room, multi-purpose room. There's also some outdoor space that people can use after meeting room. It's just perspective, just to site the building to the site. That's the approach into the main entrance. Just the rear of the building. Again, that's what I mean. I'm sure that's the front of the building. That's the access, rotary. That's the rear. I show the meeting room and then some outdoor space where people can sit. It's overall bird's eye view of the proposed structure and the site.
Great. Could you just go back to the existing plan real quick? Because there is one element that, to start talking about this a little bit, is the pumping station that we've been working with the town. Jamie had put together us with the DPW and the sewer and water people. So at this particular point, at the corner of Panther Way and Memorial Drive is where we think the location would be for the pumping station. The pumping station will not only serve Franklin Ridge, but Eaton Place, which is the 50 unit senior housing complex that's already been built, that was built in 2009, or opened in 2009. And then there's that third subdivision, subdividing out the 6.5 acres, leaving another roughly 9-10 acres to be developed down the road by the town, as well as the potential of, in the subdivision, replacing that pumping station and servicing it all here.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
When you see that subdivision, is that Iroquois?
Yes.
Okay.
So there is a subdivision, there's a station. Is it called Oak?
I want to say it.
It's Oak something. In the middle of that, and it serves about, the 100 or so, 200 units of single family housing there. So this would increase the pressure particularly for fire. This was really related to the fire. Having sufficient pressure, because this will be a sprinkled building. Eaton Place is a sprinkled building. Anything you build in Lot 3 would be sprinkled. And also giving enough pressure to increase the pressure into the subdivision, because they did early on have problems, but I think we made some improvements which kind of calmed the, but this would really be better. But the key here is that the school committee in researching this owns this land. So what Jamie and we've been talking about is the town entering into an agreement with the school committee on a lease basis to lease a portion of this area. Right now, it's the back portion of the high school. And so there's a strip of land that here's the ice rink. So there's a strip of land that goes up the hill, and then basically here would be where we build that pumping station.
So the town of Franklin owns that land, and the school committee currently has control of it.
So the school committee, the school department actually, when the high school was built, the parcels were not broken out to a point where the police station was by itself and all the other thing up on the right side of Panther Way. And so if you actually look at the deed, the high school parcel goes all the way down Panther Way.
Right.
So,
but the town of Franklin owns the land. The school committee may have control of it. The school committee doesn't own
anything. At the end of the day,
I guess that's a practical point of view, but they do have a say in it. Let's put it that way. Yeah. One way or another, it's got to be worked through.
Actually, I don't believe the deed says the town of Franklin. I think it's the school department. I think all school property is owned by the school department. If you want to look at it from the sense of it's all taxpayer of Franklin property,
yeah,
sure. Then yeah. You're right. The town, there is some check and balance there. But there were also some other options. I know we were waiting for the comprehensive permit to go through because we didn't want to hold up at the ZBA hearings the discussion over this one issue of the sewer pump. And so I know Lori and our water sewer superintendent, as well as Brutus, have been looking at the possibility of what it would take to accomplish the same goal with refurbishing the pump station at the top of Iroquois.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because also that third site that John referenced is going to likely require some significant infrastructure upgrades to generate the pressure that you would need from the bottom of the hill all the way up to a third possible site. So we didn't want to hold up at the ZBA, obviously, moving forward with this. And so the DPW and John, you know, this is the first time I've talked to you in a couple
right.
months.
Yeah.
wanted to evaluate all of those options. So the ZBA was comfortable with that because of your point, the fact that it's all town Franklin land anyway.
Yeah.
So it's really about getting the parties together to try to figure out what the best option is.
Right, the most advantageous situation is the one you should pursue if it's better to fix the existing
right.
pump.
That's right.
For flow or whatever, rather than,
that's right.
But so. When the school department had to transfer the land where Eaton Place was born, was created, to the housing trust.
Right, that's different.
I know that.
Well,
I'm not talking about
that.
I'm not talking about where the units are going. I'm talking about,
she's talking about
it. But the school department had control of that land and they had to transfer it to the housing trust in order
right.
for us to do Eaton Place.
That's right.
I guess kind of a stupid question, but why in the world is the school department still in charge of all that land over there?
To some degree, I can't go back to the high school and tell you what happened then. I don't know. I mean, if you're really to look back and say what's the way life should be, as we're sitting here magically thinking about it, you know, but also in the middle of building a $110 million building, there's a lot of other focuses that staff and other people do. And so I think that was just one of those innocent bystanders that got probably kicked to the side.
Well,
just my educated guess.
It's
okay.
It's
you know,
also
I don't know.
Backs up.
I also, just for the record, I don't foresee a real, I don't see an issue with anything that is needed here. I think it's just an additional layer of approval and discussions and, lack of a better word, bureaucracy, that we just have to go through to cross those T's and dot those I's.
But the land isn't completely outside of what you think the high school is. It's actually behind the high school in the field is the land you're talking about. Right?
Oh, no,
between
not
the
field.
High school and Panther Way.
It's a long Memorial Drive.
Yeah, it's
so
right. Okay,
it's
all right.
There's
a retention
pond on the right here.
Yeah.
So it's right here.
It's right,
so if you go up Memorial Drive, it's what we are proposing here. But as Jamie just mentioned, you know, if it's better to do here, then there's
right.
no issue with the school department.
And we have had the town's consultant that we have on retainer for all sorts of these issues been looking at this with John
right.
For a few months. It would be probably the next step, you know, in this project anyway, as I know the financing is one issue, but you know, it's something now that the process is done with the ZBA, we can go forward.
Why would you ask for a lease in the school department? Why wouldn't you just ask them to transfer the piece of property over?
Well, we could, that'll just take a lot longer.
Because
you got to get an engineer, you got to go out and have it surveyed. You got to have all, the, you know, you got to go.
Survey.
You can't just go cut off the piece of land. You got to go out and have an engineered stamp plan. You know, I mean, it's not something we can. It's not like we cannot not do that. But before we go do that, you know, I think we're trying to solve the pump station.
Isn't it more difficult to pump upwards?
Yes. That's exactly why we've been looking at the option at the top of the hill, especially given that third parcel for down the road.
Right.
Is all that
but I'm not guaranteeing that option is going to be better or more cost effective.
It's just
trying to do the due diligence to see if there's a better option.
Just as a point of reference, we had the same issue with Eaton Place, and that's what we looked at for the pump station. Then we found out that there was just enough pressure, and we just added a pump to the sprinkler system.
Is that all connected currently from the bottom of Memorial Drive all the way up through to
No, it is not. No, the subdivision is not. No, that's all under the consideration here of what we're trying to do. And as Jamie said, we did delay this because it's not critical to the, it was critical, but it wasn't need to all be designed, all that stuff, because we still had a lot of work to do in terms of whether it goes here and whether it goes up there. The bottom line here is there's two potential solutions, maybe more, that would give enough pressure for all three lots plus the subdivision. And the idea is that everybody benefits. And then we could also work with the state through the Mass Works program, possibly get funding on that piece. So that'll be this year's one of the things we'll be working through with Jamie and DPW and so forth. Because we, you know, that is an element that we have to get involved in at this particular point. So we just wanted you to be aware of that. And once we come up to the conclusion of whether it's the committee, school committee we have to go and see, or we deal with the issues up there at the subdivision, we'll report back.
Regardless of which path, ultimately, that will all be connected to that subdivision.
Has to be. We have to have enough pressure. Pressure here was, what was it, 30? I know it was 54 up here and then up on the subdivision, and it was a lot less here. I forget what the number was, but.
You know the property line. The police station is on school property.
Yeah,
go figure.
Yeah, that is.
So I'm just going to also make a, because I've talked about this publicly, council too. Another factor in this is at some point there needs to be a renovation of the police station. And so at that time is another opportunity where the town would take that chance to go ahead and maybe carve this out off of, you know, so the school committee doesn't have jurisdiction over the land where the police station is. Otherwise, when I go to, if there's ever a renovation of the, or expansion of the police station, I'd have to go through the school committee to go do that renovation, which I'm sure they don't want to do. I mean, maybe, but I mean, I think that
probably.
I mean, I'm just guessing that that's not something that they would like to enter into or get involved in. They have enough to do, right? So, so I'm just I can't explain it. It's weird, but the sculpture park is a separate parcel.
Well, that's because it was different ownership.
So the only parcel on the right hand side is Vendetti's, is all the way down to Vendetti's is. So it's basically public land.
It is. Okay. It is, because it needs to bring the pressure, water pressure, to sufficient level that it not only serves Franklin Ridge, but it serves Eden Place has sufficient pressure, but it's right on the edge. So, you know, that was. So, but once you put lot number three involved down the road, might as well do it all at one time, plus the subdivision. Like I said, years ago, when we did talk to the neighbors, they did say that there were some water pressure issues, but the town appeared to have resolved them by making some improvements, but obviously not to the extent that you'd really get a really good PSI in terms of the pressure going around throughout the whole area here. So it's a win-win for everybody.
It just has to work for us.
Yes. Significantly.
It does.
Yep.
But it also offers an opportunity through, you know, hopefully through Mass Works.
Well, how much is significant?
I'm actually having a price right now.
Who owns the pump and maintains it when it's done? And is this a gift to the neighborhood, or is this, I mean, are we paying for?
We would build it, but we can't own it because it's a multi-project solution.
So who owns
the town would own it ultimately, but we would build it. To the specifications that the town had. That's what we're proposing, and that's how the state would look at it. The state, if we only build it for ourselves, no problem, but doesn't make any sense. You want to make sure that you have sufficient pressure for everybody. Mm-hmm. So we're going to work through that. We have some time to do that because our next funding round doesn't come in, and even if it did, we would, even if we got approved our funding, this would be something that we would work through, but we want to advance this with Jamie and the DPW, so we understand it. I have a contractor that I'm working with actually is estimating the overall project, and we'll have a little bit more information from him in terms of how much all this costs. But it all builds into financing applications and so forth, which is a good lead into what I'm doing in the next year. which you want
to... You actually brought up a point of kind of wondering, cost overruns with projects are funded by...
Contingency?
There's a 5% in a new construction project, there's a 5% contingency.
Okay.
Now, this is $22 million, so great. 5% of that is, you know...
A million.
I've been doing this a long time, so my contracts are pretty tight. Mm-hmm. But on new construction, the good news is, with the exception of the site work, mm-hmm. that is probably the area where you get your running into your most potential issues. Now, we'll have a geo technical person out there, and because we know from Eaton Place, we have a lot of experience, Lucio having worked mm-hmm. as the architect there, that we did do a lot of the soil. We've already done the soil testing, but we'll do geotech on the ledge and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's our greatest challenge, because underserviced, you know, contractors will put allowances as opposed to reality numbers. But with geotech borings and so forth, we should be able to define it better. It is on us to, you know, make the project work. I've been pretty good in regards to getting projects that I've done over the years. You know, they've had their challenges, but mm-hmm. We've been able to define it.
Mm-hmm. But beyond that 5%, the housing trust is the principal funder of cost overruns?
Not necessarily. I mean, I don't normally want to go back to anybody and ask for money. So, the state, and what I do is, what ends up happening from a practical point of view is, so you have a budget of three components. The hard construction, you have the general development costs, architectural mm-hmm. and so forth, and then you have your development fee and your acquisition, which is nothing here. We save on other line items, that's first and foremost, mm-hmm. that those savings in other general development line items go toward anything that we want to do, including upgrades if we want to, you know, if we have extra money. We cost certify to the state, so all the costs are defined. Mm-hmm. We're putting this out to bid, even though I have a contractor working with me. His benefit is that he gets to know it a little bit earlier than the rest of them, but it'll be publicly bid unless I decide that these guys are so good that we go for a waiver on a negotiated bid and get a good price. But most likely we'll be bidding this out, because that's his, you know, standard practice.
What are the options if there is a need for cost overruns? What are the options at your disposal to pay off those overruns?
Well, it'd be going back to the state first and foremost and talking to them, like I said, savings and other line items in the budget. I also have, you know, obligations in terms of guarantees to pay for it and so forth. So the likelihood that we have to come back for this, you know, for mm-hmm. overruns, it's really more of a challenge in terms of getting the budget to work on all the elements up front mm-hmm. and knowing what we got. Again, I choose my contractors. If they have a reference point that says, we give you low prices, but we change order you to death, mm-hmm. they're not going to see the light of day of this project, because mm-hmm. I just don't like dealing with that. But there are legitimate costs that ultimately get impacted on a construction project. You're absolutely right. Again, other than the site itself and what's underneath there, this one, because it's new construction, we can really define what the costs are mm-hmm. and have great success yep. in that. But it's a good question.
It's just, yeah. I mean, materials can certainly change over the next year or two.
Well, we don't lock into a general contractor mm-hmm. until toward the end of the process. And I'm gonna hand this out. This is by one-stop application, just so you have it. You don't have to read through it. I only made actually 9 copies. I didn't realize we had such a good board here that we had this many people. But this is what I follow, Lucio and I follow in terms of this. Okay, I can give you this one. So basically, oh, that's white.
Dude, no, I mean, help the secret sauce. Give you your budget.
There you go. No, but the this is a state DHCD one-stop application. I don't know how many people are familiar with the one-stop. Anybody? One stop is the state's overall application process. So when we go for funding, if we're accepted, we go have to fill this out. I've already started on this one. These will be two volumes of 4-inch binders by the time it's done. But basically, there are three stages that you'll see in these. They'll see number 1, 2, and 3. 1 and 2 is what we'll be working on next year, because those are the elements that we have to put into any application that we submit. So we have, you know, what I like to do is try to get as much of that stuff done early on. Design work is the biggest one. So you see a lot of the, and the new design stuff is not in here yet. But this is, you know, it covers A to Z. If you wanted to do a project, you could follow this, or not this, but follow the one-stop checklist. It's pretty extensive in terms of what the state requires. So we will be working toward that, and that's what we'll be working in terms of assembling information over the next year as we prepare for the, which I think will be selected on the pre-application side, pretty much given the interest from the town, from the state, and then hopefully, you know, to put the full application
in. Is the state DHCD?
The state in this case is Department of Housing and Community Development, yes.
I have a question.
Sure.
The condominiums down below, the Harborwood. Harborwood goes up the hill as well. Do they have a pumping station?
I don't know.
But did they have a pumping station?
At the bottom of the hill.
I think they do.
It's at the bottom of the hill, the pumping station.
On the right? Inside?
Right to the left of the police station.
I thought, yeah, it's right.
So they're going up the hill as well.
Highwood. I didn't know if that same pumping station fed that road, but that it sounds like that that's true. It makes complete sense.
That does make, and it's all Panther Way, but it would have nothing to do with us.
I know that, but it's behind where our development was. My thinking was, if it was on the top of the hill, that we could go into that pumping station and improve it and make it less than pumping it up.
That's right.
Again.
That's exactly what we're looking into. That's exactly what CDM is doing for us.
Yep. Is the town responsible for that pumping station?
Yes, they're responsible for both. So that was the concern from the DPW, was taking on additional infrastructure ownership over long haul capital improvements.
We'll come back and talk to you guys about it once we figure out the plan.
There's more than one possible solution.
Yeah. Yep. But we're confident we have a solution. That's the good news. I think Jamie.
It's a question of which one.
Which one works best with the town and serves everybody.
That's right. Long-term cost. The big thing is the long-term capital improvement cost.
Try to take a poll as to which one you think is going to end up being the correct choice.
Yeah. You want me to flip a coin? You're going to say heads
just
to the.
Off the top of my head, I would think it's going to be the one at the top, yeah, the subdivision.
I think if they can work that out, that would like
that's going to
be
the best solution.
Best solution.
Yeah.
But they maybe were reworking it out with the town.
There was a lot of, yeah.
It wouldn't be with any private ownership of this.
I don't believe so, no.
But we would talk to the subdivision, telling them that these improvements are going to benefit them too. I don't see how they would be upset about that, right?
Well, I don't see how they would have been upset about the project in general, but they were.
But that,
I mean,
I'm just being honest.
I mean, I'm not saying anything that was not on the record.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty clear. So, you know, we have to look at the overall infrastructure cost of the sidewalks, digging up the roads, whatever it could be. Then there's the additional element of the third potential project, which I think is, again, why the analysis is taking a little bit longer. So, like, if that were to go in 15 years, you know, what would that be? So we'd have to go do it again. You know, dig up the road again if the pipe is too small or, you know, whatever the dynamics are. We want to make sure we're obviously getting it right and doing what we can for the best of the future. So, again, I think some of this was, I wouldn't necessarily put on hold, but just a bit of a pause for a little while the final stages of the ZBA permit were going through.
And the
ZBA really had no concerns over that. They were leaving that to the town to figure out in the long view, and didn't want to hold up the comprehensive permit for that. So. Obviously, that's an issue that we'll have to figure out as soon as we can.
I mean, we're again, the confidence level for all involved is it can be done. And that's the important
part.
It can be done. So as long as it can be done, working through the logistics is part of the course of projects like this and the challenges that we have. But again, we have all the elements there. We have a roadway that goes up, which was going to be extended anyway into the subdivision as an emergency access at the end. So, you have all the potential infrastructure that you were gonna put in there anyway. And then you just run that line if we have to put extra conduits in or, you know, water lines in just for a future expansion, we'll do that. So that'll all be designed at the appropriate time, but let's get there first. And I don't think it's gonna be an issue from the eyes of the state, they'll understand that. Because the comprehensive permit talks about it and we, it's all inclusive in terms of this approval. So this is, you know, this checklist, you can go through it at any time. You can send me an email if you have any questions. But, you know, for those familiar with development, this is kind of how the A to Z we have to go through, and it's quite extensive. The one thing that, and we've gotten a great deal, is community support. If you have any other people we should outreach to, I'm outreaching to Tri-Valley right now in terms of meeting with that board, because they're the senior provider.
Tri-County?
Tri-Valley.
Elder
the building?
Elder Services out of Webster, which is your regional provider. Because I have to get a you know, resident services connection here, just like Eaton Place has. Okay. Tri-Valley, so if Tri-Valley becomes, you know, and they were at one of our meetings at Eaton Place, and had expressed interest to meet with us as well. Anybody else will meet with the Housing Authority, but we would like to get some additional community support letters and so forth that we can all, you know, we got a great group because you guys provide us with letters and everybody else, so locally, state rep and so forth. So, and the state has already seen those. So, but as we fill this in, I may come back and ask somebody, who else should we outreach to? And that's it.
So if we were sitting here a year from now, same group, you would want items one and two checked off this list?
Pretty much. Some twos don't necessarily get in there, but yeah, to the extent we can. Ones definitely have to get taken care of. Twos, when they say twos, sometimes they're updates. So like on a market study, we do a market study every time when we put an application in, but then it's only good for a certain period of time.
I think you've already done all this.
No. There's a lot more.
Okay.
We had done a lot, but there's a lot more there.
What about the financing?
On the financing?
Yeah, when's the money?
Well, the financing comes in
What's the next step on the money?
Well, that's the big question in relationship to that.
Yeah.
So we didn't miss this round because we didn't have the comprehensive permit in hand at the time. And that went out November, December. So we're gonna be meeting with the state actually after I finish this meeting, one of the calls I do have with the state to just update them. I wanted to have the conference permit in hand. But we would meet with them and start talking through the different programs. We've already outreached the DHCD. Remember, we got the state approval letter for this application back before we did the conference and permit. So they're very familiar, they've been out here and so forth. And then we start working with them. And then we identify, you know, we submit our application. Here's how it works. So the state's got like low-income housing tax credits, which are our biggest programs, right? They have a state low-income housing program as well. Those two combine for the significant amount of the equity. Then we got the grant programs, the Mass Works, the housing stabilization program. There's a affordable housing trust. We get all those. It's all in this one application, so it's one-stop shopping. The trust monies, which you have given us a commitment letter, that's in here as well. And then we end up working through that, and then the state reviews all that and then either changes the complexion of the financing or works with us on what we propose. And that's how it kind of works. So the next round probably will be notifications probably in the late fall, and then into winter. There's a it's usually a 6-8 week application period, and then we submit. There's a 4-month 120-day period in which they review, and then it goes to the governor's office, and if we're lucky enough to get awarded, then the governor's office announces it. If not, then we go into the next round. Remember, it's a multi-round or multi-year kind of process here. Usually don't get it in the first, in fact very rarely do you get it in the first round. Second and third rounds is how it's financed, depending on how many projects are actually going in at the same time. And so there are a lot of projects throughout the state that are going in. About a third of the applications that go in get funded on any given round. So last time I was in here, there were 80 plus applications, 26 got funded. So we'll see. You know, we'll keep our fingers crossed that this one really has a lot of support. This has a lot of elements together. It's got town support, it's got your support, it's got comprehensive permit in hand. So it was, you know, that's always a concern because people appeal, you know, and they get in the courts and they fight and all that stuff. We don't have that here. So we could eliminate a lot of our opposition, or competition, shouldn't say opposition, competition, in some of these elements on the readiness to proceed. And that's what our goal is. That's why I'm having the contractor look at it, this preliminary site, to get my numbers in here. I could always support all that stuff. And answer your question?
Yes.
Hopefully.
Do you want the support of the Housing Authority in Franklin?
Yes. We will work with them. There is a certain percentage of units that will be project-based DHCD units that will go in here. Remember, this is a not like Eaton Place, which that was a HUD 202. This is a state-run finance program, but there are project-based Section 8s, which we get from the state, and we work with the Housing Authority on their waiting lists and so forth in order to fill those units, along with SMOC in this case. I think covers, is it right, SMOC covered as a regional provider?
Nope, no. We don't really have any overlap of any.
Nobody?
No.
No regional?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay,
I'm surprised. You have a card, and I'll take care of the Housing Authority. Yeah.
Can I send you, I didn't bring cards today. Yeah. I just thought, maybe I have one.
I think I have one.
Speaking of, this is my email.
Oh, thank you.
Good. A couple of small tangential announcements on the same topic. On February 12th, the council did ask me to set up a affordable housing conversation. So on February 12th, the Housing Authority, Lisa, is actually coming in to present about what the Housing Authority needs are. And there'll be a little bit more of a discussion. So if anybody wants to attend that meeting, just an FYI, on February 12th at about 7 o'clock. The second thing I would mention as a sidebar is on February 5th, the council has also asked me to set up a discussion on the Community Preservation Act. So I've pulled all of that information together, and they will be having a discussion on the Community Preservation Act on February 5th. And so that's just another affordable housing related discussion. Several of the councilors have asked for that over the last year, and so I was able to schedule a night where they could have that discussion.
Can you use CPA funds for affordable housing?
Oh yeah, you have to. You have to use 10% of it for affordable housing.
Yeah.
And the Housing Authority actually, by statute, has one seat on the Community Preservation Committee that has to be formed to sell that money, or to spend that money. So the Housing Authority in Franklin has a pretty big role in that. I mean, there's ways to kind of work with that committee if it was ever established to get other seats. You know, maybe the Affordable Housing Trust gets a seat, or maybe some other ways. So it's not just the Housing Authority, but the Housing Authority has to be on that committee. And 10% of those monies raised every year have to be spent on affordable housing. And it could be spent on, to be honest, it could be spent on projects like this.
Most of the towns that have CPAs, that have housing trusts, that's where they get
their
money.
In fact, I will tell you that in Holliston, Cutler Heights, which is behind the town hall, that got $909,000 in CPA funds. Mm-hmm. That's how that project actually got a big significant local commitment on the project.
But bottom line is the CPA money has fallen off dramatically from when it first started, and there's not that much money in there now to be dispersed between the towns that have signed up for it.
Well, the state changed the formula last year. So actually, as of January 1st, that it was down to a low of about 11 or 12%. You're correct about where the matching money fell off. But they did just jack up the rates, and as of January 1, those new rates will take effect. In fact, the Register of Deeds just sent me this morning, just sent a letter in the mail. The town of Franklin gives away about $130,000 a year in fees that we pay for, residents here pay for, that go to other CPA towns. So it's a pretty significant amount of money that's being sent elsewhere.
And the state just, they did just up the match. I think it's not much. It's about a quarter. It's about 25 cents on the dollar, I believe.
It's free money.
It's matching money, right. It's matching money, right.
Free money.
And it, you know, when you look at the bigger towns, Cambridge has $10 million now.
Yeah.
Newton, at least that, you know, in terms of that, that
annually.
They're using. And they use it for not only this. The key here is that it's used for housing, which is critical in a lot of these communities, but also for parks and for historic and for you know, land acquisition too. But you're right. In the, there's about a third to probably 40% of the communities now are in CPA communities. I
176. I just read the letter before I came down here by chance. It was in the
really
registrar. 176.
What percentage will we have to vote in to capture that 130,000?
I'm not sure I understand.
So you have to have we get to pick a certain percentage.
Yeah, one, two, or three.
Right. So what would we have to vote in order to capture the whole 130,000 that we're giving away every year? 1%.
Well, you'd have to do, actually, you'd probably have to do the full three, but you would do all the exemptions along with it. You'd do the first 100,000, right. You'd do the low income exemption. You probably wouldn't do the commercial industrial exemption, but you would probably need to do it up at 2-3% to get that money fully back. It would have to be the top percentage.
It is one of the...
It's based off how much you make, right? So it's a match on what you raise locally. So.
It's been going for about 15 years or so now. I don't know if they said
almost
anything 20. About that, 20 years?
Yeah, signed in 2000. First communities got in 01, 02. So, yeah, 17, 18 years. It was the first time the legislature in 17 years raised the fee. So the reason why you had over 20 years, you had more communities get in, and you had them raise more revenue, especially when Springfield, Boston, Cambridge, Peabody, when those cities get in, they're raising huge amounts of money, right? On total dollars, but because the state hadn't kept the fee up with it, you saw the match go this way. So you had an inverse reaction happening. Into Judy's point, it had gotten so low that they were starting to talk about getting out of it in a lot of communities, because you're only getting 11 cents on the dollar when one day you were maybe getting a dollar for dollar. You know, if you were in Concord or Harvard, you were sitting there going, "That's not a good return on investment," because we used to get a better investment, right? But I think since the state readjusted the fee structure, hopefully that conversation will go away. But like I said, it was Councillor Pellegrini's asked for it a few times, Councillor Hamlin, Councillor Earls, and then a slew of people that have been asking for this discussion. So
do they understand it's increasing taxes? Because the
people
you just mentioned have been coming out against increasing taxes.
This would probably be a discussion for that meeting. We should all attend that.
Yeah. I was just kind of throwing it out there.
Yeah,
a couple
that's
other,
great.
Affordable housing related discussions, right?
I asked about that too.
About CPA? Yeah.
No, but I was more wondering about a different population. I know you guys are focused on the older population. Mine was more about the 20 somethings, late 20s, that would be able to get an affordable unit to start out in. Like under that, like I think I told you at the meeting, I started under that home opportunity program where I got a reduced rate unit. And 4 years later, they let me sell it for $25,000 more.
Yep.
I was able to buy a house with that down payment, and then someone else that was income eligible bought mine.
Right.
And it just goes on. I don't even know if we do that anymore.
Well, the housing trust does that.
Yeah,
we have a number of houses
do.
That we've bought, and we sell to first-time home buyers, and then they can make some money when they sell it, but they can't buy it for $30,000 and sell it for $120,000.
No, it was all
a difference.
Yeah, right. I mean, this was way back. But one last question on that. This was like a Benjamin's Landing. So obviously some of the condos that we approved must have given some of these units.
That's correct.
Does that still go on then?
Yeah.
I just didn't know how we tell people.
Right.
We have
10%. If a private developer, the other program where if a private developer develops, say a condo complex like you're talking about, a certain percentage of units, sometimes in some of these towns is allocated, they have to either allocate 10% of the units, like Franklin, the condos over at Franklin, what is it?
That's
over on Lincoln Street.
25%.
Is it 25%? Whatever you guys negotiate on those things, but there is programs like that. The one you were talking about also is that I've started to see for the first time in the last couple of years I would almost say it's a pilot program where they are trying to do that outside of even the developer contribution thing.
I just didn't know, like, when they came up for sale, do you guys get notified? One of those
yes.
units?
Yeah, Max.
Yes,
no, hi, Maxine.
I do.
Maxine. Mm-hmm.
You do? Okay.
Yeah,
I just didn't know if they could be put on. I know you have someone that's doing a lot of social media now.
Yep.
Like maybe when one comes up for sale, if it shows what income they need to have, if that can get
posted.
She
does put that.
We do.
Yeah,
we have a whole website for the trust, and we have a list of the units. And then when they do come up for sale,
oh, so it's on that website.
We put them on the municipal trust website, but we also started putting them on Facebook and Twitter.
Okay.
Just to get the word out a little bit about when units come up for sale. They're not always. There's not always a big rush for every unit. I'm telling you.
I know. It's just,
sometimes it's a slog to get people to take them.
I'm just,
really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I know. I mean, I had a $400 mortgage in Franklin. I mean,
absolutely.
How do you?
You would think there would be a line, you know, down East Central Street, you know, up
I
door
would,
or whatnot. But
okay. That was just my question. Thank you, sir.
So then, I don't know if we do the program. I'm not familiar with the program that you were talking about. Home. Yeah, Hop. I'm not.
I don't believe that's a program anymore, but
right.
That was
that
Benjamin's
gone?
Landing.
Yeah, it went south after the crash. But again, there's something similar to it that they just started doing pilots on in specific areas. I don't follow it as not probably as much as I should, but there was always a question about that. Why aren't you back into the problem was that the state also got crushed by the
housing
class. Yeah, they collapsed. They got nailed as well because everybody else, you know, walked away from them. And so they were trying to maximize their, you know, what worked for them. But I have heard that there has been some discussion about that on a not to the scale that we do on the rental side.
No,
you get more bang for the buck on the rental side from the state because the state gets more units.
My thing was just like, you know, a guy and a wife with a baby that meets the income eligibility, they're pretty much priced out of.
That was a great program,
you know,
but
it was really
again,
good.
Also, you have to remind the income requirements are much different. And so there's a lot of people in Franklin that don't meet those income eligibility requirements. And so that's also a big challenge where even the 20 or 30 something, while they may have a difficult time in the global real estate market of Massachusetts, which I just don't know a lot of people who aren't frustrated with that. You know, I mean, I think if you're bringing a dual income, you know, you're nowhere near what those income eligibility guidelines are going to be. And I think that's sometimes the struggle we have with some of the units that we have in the trust is just is how do you meet those income eligibility guidelines for a dual income household with college degrees. Where they both have professional jobs, even if they are young and can't afford Newton or Needham, you know, or Hopkinton or South or whatever. But you know, but those income eligibility guidelines are quite low. Yeah. Tough to meet.
It is that is
Thank
one of the
you.
Greatest challenges that most communities have. You have someone coming out of college, maybe they are the ones that get there. But again, and then there's credit checks and all sorts of fun things that you have to go through.
Right.
But
it's true. The credit check.
Yeah, no,
if you want to know more about that program, it, you know, you check with the state and see what the or your state rep and see if they're pushing that along.
I'm gonna put him on the spot, but Brian also right next to you knows as much about this stuff as it's just about anybody, so you can pick his brain too.
Good, I got his.
Right, Brian.
Oh, I know a little.
I know a little. Just a little.
So is there any other questions in regards to Franklin Ridge? I want to thank you for your time. We will, you know, we'll periodically come and visit you and update you as we go. Anything else you want to ask us? Great. Thank you very much.
I have a housing trust. We had two houses that were going into foreclosure.
We have three.
Where are they?
One's Brandywine Village. That is, that deed does not survive foreclosure.
Thank you very much.
So we will lose that house.
We will not. We will then make money.
We may make money. Hopefully we make money. Yeah, it depends on what it sells for. It
We're
depends on what
they're selling $400,000-$500,000 down there.
Well, it'll sell on auction and the bank will set the price. And it depends on how much they owe the bank and how much they sell over what they owe the bank comes to us.
Okay, where's the others?
Five Marks Way.
Brandywine Village.
So 212.
And 38 Stonehenge.
Okay.
Stonehenge is in, you can't get to it from here.
It is.
You have to go to Bellingham to get to it.
Oh,
the HUD qualifications.
Behind Grellick's.
Where's your maid?
And are they all on the market?
And what the bank requires.
They are all going on the market. The state is actually going to market them for us.
So they will be on our, the town's website so that people can?
I will get it on the town's website, yes.
Okay.
Ready, Lou Jill? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sean.
Have a great week.
Thanks, guys.
Let's hope the weather holds.
This is your bag.
Yeah, I know. It was good.
Second topic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
It's Brian.
Oh,
thanks.
Oh, thank you very much. All right.
Thanks for bringing the show. It makes,
yeah.
So it makes the discussion go so much easier.
Yes.
It's colorful as well.
It's, yes. Well done. Okay.
I want that presentation.
I don't want to get too close to your bar.
Move,
thanks. For all the elbow. In case you know.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Could happen, dude. I'm not sure how many are made, but you can pass these around.
I will
So I'm sorry, can we just go around the room real quick to see who everybody is and who's on the committee and who's a guest and who's on another committee? So I'm Chris Berger, I'm on the committee.
Yep.
Bob Karras, I'm on the committee.
Mary Ann Tony on the committee. Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem.
I thought we were going around the table.
That's it. Brian Chandler, Town Council.
I'm Amy Love, Town Planner.
I'm Brian Taberna, Planning Director. Mary.
Okay. Jamie Allen, the Town Administrator, and I'm on the committee.
Chris Feely, I'm on the committee.
Maxine Kinnard, I'm on the committee.
Judy Pepper, on the committee.
And you're also on the housing.
Yep.
Is that
yes.
Right? The housing authority,
yes.
As well?
Okay. Yep.
Good. It's a good crossover?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just,
yeah.
You know, it's been a while since we met.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Very fine.
So the Department of Planning and Community Development is working on the town's affordable housing protection plan. It's outdated by a few years, and we would like to get it done in the very near future. We've done a lot of the preliminary work, written sections of the document. We probably have to go back and check some data here and there, but in general, we have a good start. And we're at a point where we need to do the public process. We want to get the input from the public on what the priorities should be, the goals and strategies. So I'm here to inform you of that, to get your input in general, and any time in the next 6 months you have something to say about it, please get it right to, you know, send it right to our office, either Maxine, Amy, or myself. And we were wondering if the trust could hold a public hearing in maybe next month. You know, you don't have to do any of the work, we can do it, but we need to have a setting to hold it in. And I think this, that, you know, having the trust, you know, in a bigger room, obviously, than this, and try to get the public to come, and we would present information. We would give some draft goals that I do actually have a few draft goals and strategies on this document that we can consider, and anything else that the trust might want to throw in there is fine too. But I'm at that point that we need to actually just move it forward. We can have this thing done, well, definitely within 6 months if we just move now and get it done. It's been a long time coming. We always seem to have other priorities in town, especially in my department, so I think it would be good to get this done, so.
Is this an update to the master plan, or is this?
No, this is an update for the housing production plan.
Okay.
Actually, it's, I don't even know how, the last time it might be 2011 or maybe something back then, I'm not sure exactly.
I don't recall, I don't think we were involved in that one at all.
No, but the data and everything from it did go into the master plan, and, okay. And it's this is for, the master plan is housing.
Right.
Affordable also, but in general, but housing in general. This is for actually to develop, essentially the way I look at it is to keep 10% affordable units in town that we have. That is essentially what our main goal is, part of this. But it also, we wrote these draft goals out, and first is the subsidized housing inventory, making sure we never drop down below the 10 again. Then increase affordable housing units to meet existing and anticipated housing and employment needs, and increase the number of housing units affordable to Franklin's low and moderate income residents, as Brian was talking about. So there's different ways to approach it, but the key thing for the town, so we don't get big project forced on us, is to make sure we maintain that 10%. We do need to, affordable housing is something that every town needs to think about, obviously. But keeping that 10% has to be a primary focus, I think.
Could you get us an electronic copy of the existing plan?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sure.
March 2011. Say that again? March 2011.
Okay. So Maxine can take a PDF of it and send it out to you guys to look at.
Well, it's a terrific idea, and we should host it. But could we see the presentation before that night?
I don't care if you want to have. I'll go to all the meetings you want. I don't have a problem with it. It's up to.
No.
I think he was asking us to put a draft of what you'd be presenting at that forum.
It's just so we know ahead of the meeting.
No, that's fine.
10 or 15 slides.
That way we don't have any questions.
No, that's fine. Okay. No, more questions are better with it, obviously. But the.
I think it's a great idea. I'm in favor of it.
Yeah. Well, we can do a PowerPoint of a few slides and everything, and we can send that out. We'll also develop, it won't be a full survey, but it'll be basically give your input on your thoughts on these things. I don't know if you put out a question like are you in favor of affordable housing? You don't want to get into that, but you want, what are your thoughts on affordable housing? Please give us some ideas. Should we be focused on it is a question where there's going to be a lot of naysayers that will go out there, no, we don't want any more housing in general, we don't want those people there. It's hard, because we have to care how we ask the question. But obviously housing's important, and we need to start gaining the input of not only organizations like yourself, but also town residents in general. We really need to be open to everybody's opinions. So
what are you thinking? Like a meeting in the council
chamber.
Room or the library, like we do with the master plan or something like that?
Yeah, it would be the chamber, it would be the third floor, it would be someplace, big room.
An evening thing so people could go?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it would be.
When do you want to do it?
I'd like to do it sometime in February if we can, and give us a little time to get ready, but also it's not pushing it back too far. But we've already... You just mentioned two things going in February already, so we have maybe towards the end of February would be probably way to go. We try to do something at that point. I don't want to keep pushing it back though. So.
I think to Chris's point, I think you do the date after you see what the current plan says and what the presentation is and what the message is that's getting out on how to get that discussion going. I think once you have that, then you can
if it's end of February, early March, middle March, I mean, what's, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I'd rather do it right.
Planning department can guide the date, I guess, but
that's right.
It's just, it's not a, it's not our plan, it's your plan.
That's right.
It's the town's plan.
We're working, yeah, the town's plan, excuse me.
No, that's right. No, really, I mean.
I mean, we're just sort of hosting the event, we put on the tuxedo.
Right, you're hosting the event as an interested party and, right, I mean, it's not like you're advocating any of that, I fear, you need a, we need a setting to hold it.
Well, I think we should be advocating for it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, once we look at the plan, sure, we could.
Right, we should be supporting the plan.
It's up to you guys to decide what you want to do, obviously.
We're not going to host a plan, I'm not going to advocate for, that would be crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
We should be 100% behind the plan.
Town council isn't always the best place to have a public hearing.
Although they will at some point on this.
Before, they have to sign off on the end.
It's set off on the end, so they're going to.
And I'm sure there'll be town councils at multiple meetings and everything. But they're not always the best place to have a public meeting, because it, you know, people don't feel open to, you know, in a free way. And so you want a place that you can sit down and people can talk about things and we can. Anyway, so we'll start, we'll get things together, we'll get you the plan emailed out to you. The rest of the things should not take long to put together at all. So I think that whenever we can, I'll talk with Jamie about the calendar. We'll go.
You guys okay with all that?
Okay.
Okay.
Absolutely. One of the challenges in all this is defining affordable.
Yep.
You know, I think the word affordable is a misleading term. People define that according to them. There are people that live in Cambridge that believe there's just, you know, there's the, you know, just it depends on what you see as affordable relative to you. And I think that's one of the challenges in this is how do you break that up a little bit to attract and to get at the demographic. I think Hansel Chandler kind of nailed it, which is, you know, there's this kind of, you know, middle class that's being redefined, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the demand that people are speaking to more than what the state believes is affordable. The state believes affordable is near poverty level income. Mm-hmm. It's not what we're, you know, it's not what people mentally are talking about here. And I think that's one of the hardest things to get around. Which is, I think, why a few years ago when the ballot question went before the state to eliminate Chapter 40B, it failed miserably because people saw affordable housing and they're like, I'm not voting against that, you know, despite the nuances with 40B.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one of the tricks in this discussion is how do you define affordable and what does that mean to individual people?
I agree.
What are you really trying to, I think what Council Chandler brings up is what a lot is on the minds of people. You know, my children, I want them to live here, you know, but they may just have to deal with the reality of growing up to the fact that housing is at a different price level than what, you know, as opposed to people who are homeless and there's, or they need transitional assistance. And
but Franklin
and
has their own section of that as well. Not
that's
everybody
right.
in
Absolutely.
Franklin is wealthy.
That's right.
You know, there's an
Absolutely.
Awful lot of
Absolutely.
Families
Absolutely.
In Franklin who are, whether they're seniors or they're
right.
young adults, who are barely hanging on.
That's right. Right. Mm-hmm. right. That's right. And that's another demographic that, in the eye of the beholder, people focus on that, but is so that's a different issue than what I think a lot of other people are discussing too. So framing that is
when I'm
is
thinking affordable, and I think for this plan, we want to make sure we maintain a 10%, but if you look at the three goals, those three goals are really written for different categories of people that need
right.
affordable housing. They're not necessarily going to afford a condominium that comes up, you know, maybe, you know, that is currently in the roles of affordable. We, a lot of people, they can't get between the what qualifying their revenue, the banks, and all the different things. That's why so few people actually are able that actually put applications in. It's that combination, but we do need housing for people that work around here, that are living around here, that want to break out on their own, that, you know, all of these things. And I think by categorizing it, whether this is perfect or not, that's the general idea.
Mm-hmm.
There are more types of people out there than people that would qualify for a state or federal program or whatever. There's a lot of things to think about. And I think going into the master plan, that's the same thing on housing. we can't just say, okay, we're gonna build a half million and make more expensive homes and everybody's happy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. It doesn't work for, eventually it doesn't work for any community. Some do well for a long period of time, and then I say, wow, we have a major problem. Is the people, my kid who, you know, wants a house can't afford $500,000, whatever the case may be.
So one of the things you said was people, if you ask them, they're gonna be, you know, they don't want any more housing. I think the point we need to make so people don't think that way is we need to explain to them what happens if we drop below that 10%. Right. Then we lose control of what type of housing comes in.
Sure, exactly.
I think that's a big point.
Yeah, we're going to have 10%
minimum. Right.
But question is what's our role in it?
It's important to that as well.
That's right.
Yeah, we've got 256 apartments coming up with the old Thompson Presses, and there's no affordable in them at all.
I know that.
And there's a project going across the street that doesn't have any affordable component, you know.
And there we've prioritized for years, and it was on my goals for the council to consider at the last meeting, which was the inclusionary zoning idea, which is really the staff's top priority, which was getting it some indirectly.
It's one of the strategies on the
right.
And it's something that since I've been here, I talk about every year, or 18 months.
Month?
And whatever, we put it out there and say, and everybody said, well, not now. Well, we'll deal with it later. Not now. And it just, and the same thing with the zoning in the general residential 5 and the other ones, the C1 zoning, for instance, where you can get a special permit for up to one per, you know, 1,000 square feet of, you know, of land or whatever. I mean, if you really do everything right and you don't have any affordable component. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened on Dean Avenue.
That's right.
And we exactly don't right. want those to continue because you could, first of all, it's not helping most of the people in this town that will need a place to stay in the near future because they can't afford the market rate, and many people can't anyway. And you need to get it so if you're gonna invite developers in, they have to think about that, including our own people, that our own local developers.
Both of the projects that you just mentioned, which is the same person.
Yes.
So all we can do is put the develop plans the best we can by input from everybody in town, and have town council approve it, and then whatever was approved is what the strategy is that we can actually go forward with. If it says to rezone whatever, then that's what we do. We put the amendments out there, and then it gets debated at that time and talked about it. So. But I do want to point out that the master plan, of course, had these same exact things in it in general right now. So you're not working without.
Mm-hmm. Yours is going to be more of a specific roadmap to get it done, right?
Yeah,
I assume.
Yeah, I think so, yeah, but at the same time, we did have the general concepts in the master mm-hmm. plan, and they were approved, you know, not that long ago. This is a state DHCD type of document that they want to see every town maintain every 5 years. We're out of date, we want to make sure that it gets done quickly, and then we have put it on a calendar of basically every 5 years to start the process over again and continue into the cycle along with all the other plans.
All right.
Thank you.
So no affordables going on in Tina at all?
Nope.
That's
all one
street
bedrooms
for me.
All one bedrooms, yeah. Except for about a dozen.
There's two and
13.
Three.
What? There's
two and
three.
It's going to be such a boom for downtown. I hope I can get a seat at that new brewery.
I hope you can get you out of your driveway someday. If you want to go to work.
I'll be fine.
I think you might
have somebody walking.
I'll take care of you with that seat at the brewery.
Well, that's part of the plan, right? Revitalizing downtown. I think, you know, there's 500 people going down to the restaurants. And, you know,
it is.
There'll be at least 50 of them out every night.
But
right?
I think that your point is, and Judy's point is so well taken. I mean,
yeah.
Without some better rules in the zoning code,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a project where there was, I think, a lost opportunity of, you know, Even if you said 10% was the bare minimum, right?
And then all of
you're talking 20 units out of that development, 25. Just think of what that would have made a huge difference in this community.
Just the number of affordable counts.
But huge.
Yeah. Over across the street, same thing.
I agree with you, but
right across the street, you got another 100 units apartments like going in right over here at Keegan's. Right across the street, we have we have a series of affordable units over here. Mm-hmm. It would have made sense, but that again, without the right rules in place, it's hard to make.
That's a missed opportunity.
That's 370 units that are going against the 10%.
Right. It's well, right. Even at 10%, that would have been 37 units that people would have been able to get into. Mm-hmm. Even just as importantly, your point, Brett, if you had done 15%, that would have given you another dozen or so. More to play with in terms of maintaining that 10% at the SHI, because as all of you remember, there'll be a census going on this year, and when those numbers come out, those numbers will change for the next decade. So, it's still a nimble process of the state, but once you get that census, foundation line in the sand built in, it's tough to get away from that for a little bit. So, next couple of years are a critical time to put those things. Well, at least we think next couple of years is a critical time to put those. Stipulations into the town code to set the town up for the next decade of success. So.
That third project has to be all something that counts for affordable.
Well, all these will.
Right.
So, but the third project, I think, the trip there is not only the water pressure, but the gradient back from what we've heard, from the folk.
It would just be a smaller
development.
Like the one on Plain Street,
that's right? Yeah, it could be that.
That's right.
Could be 10 units. Yeah, you're right.
What is our current percentage at this point?
Technically 11.89.
Okay.
I wasn't going to do the Jeff Nutting roundup. Right, Jeff? You listen to this recording at home later.
It was 8.94, I think.
Right. But I guarantee you, in actuality, that number is lower. In terms of permitted units, even if they don't all get built right away, remember, a good example is up off Pond Street, those old units there, those are being phased in, right? So they may stop at 70, and then if there's a market correction, they may wait. But you have to still count those as permitted units. So I guarantee you, based on what's permitted at the Planning Board or the ZBA, that percentage is much less. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't gotten funneled up to DHCD and put through the number cruncher yet, but I would think it's maybe even below 11. I would imagine. Yeah. They don't hesitate to say that either. So
you're already below 10?
No.
We're not going to.
Definitely won't be below 10.
The census coming up, you're going to be fine, I think. Yeah. But then 10 years later, anything can happen because of the development, right? You don't know what's going to happen. So we have to be ready to make sure that we maintain that percentage.
To Brian's point, I would say this last words of caution is, yes, we would be fine, but we also didn't see Keegan's coming across the street.
That's right.
And so there's another 104 units that just, took a huge step back. I made that my point on that project well-known publicly many times, is that, you just do another 104 there, another 38 over here, and that, you just start seeing it happen. If Maple Street gets to the next level, that's another 58 or 60. You quickly get to draw yourself back if those rules aren't in place to encourage that stuff. So we got a huge victory with Glen Meadow, but that only lasts so long. And this 60 units, we're going to have to continue to think outside the box, I feel like, on this project that John was in about, because if that takes 7 years or 6 years to get all the financing, think of what else could be built in those 6 years, and that 60 units up there can't compensate for the vast quantity of everything else. If that were being built in the next year or two, that'll get you some extra collateral, right? Just on the numbers alone, that buys you another 600 units of market rate to maintain that 10%. That would be a pretty big benefit, but we have to find some ways to get the revenue to help John out, and we'll be trying to do everything we can to do that. So, sounds like an adjournment to me.
Time.
All right.
We haven't had such a great meeting in ages. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.